I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. We're here today, Tyler, to sell some hope to a certain franchise out there, a franchise that has been through a lot in the last few years, a lot in the last 30 years, a lot in general. The Washington, not Redskins, not football team, the Commanders. We are going to talk about the Washington Commanders and why I actually believe that this could be a sneaky good year for them, and somewhat similar to a team last year that had the number two overall pick, the Houston Texans, who were extremely slept on last year. They got a quarterback that came in and changed the entire dynamic. They got a coach that came in and changed the entire dynamic, and they got a GM. And I think that the Washington Commanders have a lot to be hopeful about and to be excited about. Dan Quinn's going to be leading the way. Adam Peters going to be getting guys in the building that make sense. They have a true generational talent at quarterback who's just got to figure it out as quick as he can to be competitive. And they have a division that, in my opinion, is not as solid as the public might agree for it to be. I do think the Eagles got better this offseason. I do think that the Giants had no choice but to get better this offseason. And I think the Cowboys did what the Cowboys do best and believe that they're better than they are, and they stayed exactly the same, which in today's NFL means they got worse. Welcome to our Washington Commanders case study.
I'm so excited. I love that we can now dive into these teams after the draft has happened. We have a comprehensive view of what they're going to look like. And I think that point about the division is probably your best point there, because a lot of people just assume it's going to be Cowboys, Eagles, like it has been the last couple of years. But the Eagles ended the year horribly last year. You mentioned the Cowboys did not get any better. I could see this being the Commanders division to lose come the end of the year. And if not a wild card spot, I don't think it's crazy to see them winning the division. There's got to be, I'm sure they're plus a lot of money right now, but might not be a bad one to pick up at this point in the season.
Yeah. You know, when you look at them, they were close last year. Like, they were close in a lot of games. They just couldn't figure it out. And they threw for a lot of yards. They had Sam Howell leading in the passing category, like total yards, whatever, passing for a lot of the year till he started throwing a lot of interceptions. Defensively, they couldn't get it done. Offensively, they were just sloppy but explosive at times. Like, they had weapons in the receiving room to get things done. They just weren't pulling it all together. They were not as bad of a team as people thought they were. They just were riverboat running around, right? Like, that's kind of been the MO.
Well, they were such like a lame duck team, it felt like. I think a lot of people were surprised Ron Rivera stuck around that year anyway. They had Eric Bieniemy come in, and I guess the hope was he was going to provide some spark, but that's a weird, I mean, that's like, he's like the weirdest offensive coordinator in the entire NFL. The fact that he's had the career he has and hasn't gotten a head coaching job makes you think maybe it's him and not everybody else, but it seemed like a lost season from the beginning. It just didn't seem like they were ever going to be competitive. And I don't know what your sense is, you know, being in locker rooms before, but it feels like come halfway through the year, you're just kind of not giving up, but you're resigned to the fact that this isn't our year. The entire organization seemed to be looking forward anyway. And here we are. We're at that point that they're looking forward to.
And they did. And look, like, they went 4-13 last year, and they ended up trading away their two best defensive players midway through the season. And I think at the end of the day, there's some really cool pieces that people do not think about when you're thinking about a rebuild for a franchise. Can it become a destination spot for free agents? Because that is what gets you over that little hump. You have to draft well, but like, free agency is what can take your team from point A to point C, D, E, F really fast. And you look at teams in trades, you look at teams like the 49ers, they got Christian McCaffrey. They didn't draft him. They traded for him, like, sold the house to get him. Then you have teams like the Rams, who went out and got Matt Stafford. Like, that was a guy. And then you look at the Dolphins. They went and got Tyreek. They went and got Jalen Ramsey, like, two really big contributors for their success. Like, the draft is a component. It's important. You have to get pieces out of it, but you have to become a destination spot for free agents. And how do you do that? With a young, exciting quarterback. Look at the Texans. Do you think Stephon Diggs went to Houston because he wanted to go to Houston, just because he loved the city, because he whatever? He went because of CJ Stroud, because he felt like it was a division that could be taken over, they could dominate, they're guaranteed to go to the playoffs if they play above average, and they have a chance. Every free agent that's a big name guy wants to have a chance to compete. He wants to get paid, this, that, and the other. The Commanders are primed to become that with a guy like Jaden Daniels, a quarterback. And again, we're going to figure it out early, but his upside, his ceiling, it's something that's pretty exciting, man. And I think you're going to find this trickle-down effect over the next 3-4 years of free agents that will be signing with the Commanders. One, to play under a guy like Dan Quinn. Two, to play with a quarterback like Jaden Daniels. And three, to uproot a division that honestly has a lot of question marks. And when you look all the way up and down at this, you look at the Eagles. They lost, obviously, Jason Kelce. They re-signed some guys to some massive contracts. Like, they just paid the house for A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. Obviously, Jalen Hurts is under a massive contract. Like, they've got a lot of money tied up. So how much defensive help can they get? That's a plus for other people in the division. When I'm another team and I'm looking at, look, they got $100+ million a year going to three players on offense. There's only so much cap space available. So they're going to have to either figure it out in the draft or get some really cheap free agents to play well, because that's a really top heavy team.
Yeah.
And so, and then you look at the Cowboys, they've got people to pay. And I don't know, man. I'm just like, the Commanders, I think it's such a good landing spot for Dan Quinn, for how he operates, how he manages teams. And I think Adam Peters is a really good part to that. And people always like to look at Dan Quinn and his time in Atlanta and their rise to the Super Bowl run and this and that, and then their fall. I'm sorry, but Commanders fans will be super happy to go to a Super Bowl and lose it and then fall back. Like, at least just get a little taste, you know what I mean, of what it used to be.
I completely agree.
And I think he's going to be better than what he was in Atlanta. And I don't, a lot of things that went down in Atlanta at the very end came to contracts that were a freaking problem. They paid so many people that could not stay on the field and could not perform after their success, instead of getting younger, getting more talented. Like, there ended up being a lot of money wasted in Atlanta. If you go back and look at the contracts that they paid after that Super Bowl run, that never lived up to the production pre-Super Bowl. And as a coach, you can only work with what you got. They had old guys that were not producing, and that kind of was really what happened in Atlanta and why people got ran out of town. Every single person that got paid there got cut, traded, released, anything like that. It was a complete mismanagement of the success that they had. And I think come round two with Dan Quinn, the guy like Adam Peters, who came from San Francisco, who they are fully understanding the right way to do it. I'm excited to see how this plays out. And I think Commanders fans have a lot of things to be hopeful for.
I was listening to Mike Greenberg talk about some of his favorite teams. He's obviously a Jets fan, talks about a lot on Get Up. And he talks about how us as fans prescribe the term losing franchise to certain teams. And he said, like, most teams in the NFL, for instance, are not losing franchises. I would put Atlanta in this bucket. They obviously have some prolific losses, the Super Bowl collapse being one of the most prolific losses. But like you said, to lose in the Super Bowl does not make you a losing franchise. To lose in the Super Bowl does not make Dan Quinn a losing coach. A losing franchise is what the Commanders have been for the last decade, where they have no hope. Literally top down are a complete mess inside and out. Personnel, executive, business decisions, like, it's a complete mess. So to bring in somebody like Dan Quinn, I think you're right. He's unfairly judged as a quote unquote loser. He was among some of the most successful coaches in that mid-2000s era. Like you said, the roster got flipped around for a bunch of reasons.
He's been successful out of his control.
Exactly. And so
Seattle, I'm excited. Legion of Boom. Super successful. Atlanta, they were dog shit. Like, they were dog shit, and he pulled them out and led them to a Super Bowl. Then he goes to the Cowboys, who have had an abysmal ass defense. And I'm looking at this now, like, last year, again, the Cowboys, people forget about the question marks the Cowboys had last year. They lost Trevon Diggs with an ACL, right? Early, beginning of the season. They thought their defense was going to be screwed. Like, yeah, they have Micah Parsons. They lost Diggs. They lost Leighton Vander Esch. Had to medically retire. Like, they've had guys that just have been seemingly unreplaceable on their defense, replaced with better production, with guys that are coached up to be in the right spot. What was it? Bland? It was Bland, right? Bland was the DB that had all the interceptions last year.
Yeah.
Came out of nowhere. Do you think that it was just because he was some God's gift to football, or maybe it was a mixture of a guy willing to take an opportunity and also being put in the right place at the right time in the right scheme? Just like, I mean, you look at guys like J.C. Jackson. Couple of years ago with the Patriots, was a stud for them, led a bunch of interceptions, then went somewhere else and couldn't produce. Like, sometimes it's the right player with the right match and the right situation. And Dan Quinn has found a way to do that with a lot of guys by setting them up for success on defense. And the Cowboys last year let up 315 points allowed. Do you want to know how many points allowed the Commanders let up last year?
I guess it's a lot more than 315.
518.
Wow, almost double.
Points allowed. Almost double. And the converse of that offensively, the Commanders had 329 points for last year, and that would put them still not great, but like not bottom of the division. The Giants only had 266. So all of this to be said, like the starting point for the Commanders from what they had last year did not seem as much of a personnel issue, and they don't have some crazy ass contracts where people are getting paid a lot of money that are not like, they're not dead contract wise. Like, yeah, they have some problems they got to deal with, like any other team that has some overpaid players. But as far as a starting from scratch point with obviously a really good, talented quarterback as a rookie, they can manage that situation right, pull some people around him that give him some help. With the next 2-3 years, like you could be looking at the Commanders like they're a problem in that division. The Cowboys are only going to get older. The Eagles are going to be around for a while. And the Giants, man. Who the hell knows about the Giants? They had a good defense last year, forcing turnovers, but it's hard to pull offense out of your ass. So we'll see what happens with them this year.
I'm going to push back for the sake of Commanders fans because it's probably nagging in the back of their head. I think for a lot of fans, Ron Rivera was supposed to be what we're hyping Dan Quinn up to be right now, which is took a team out of relative obscurity in the Panthers, brought them to the Super Bowl, lost in the Super Bowl, but still one of these coaches who was Mr. Consistent. And Dan Quinn has a 43-42 record all time as a head coach. So he's sort of this, he's the average NFL head coach by from a record standpoint. I think Ron Rivera was supposed to be that same thing where he steadied the ship. That obviously did not work out. It got kind of sad at the end. How does Ron Rivera turn out, or how does Dan Quinn rather turn out any differently than the Ron Rivera era?
So in my opinion, Ron Rivera has always been a middle of the run, like team wise. He had a few years with Cam Newton that were anomalies offensively. Like they were not a great offensive team. They played good defense. They controlled the ball and they ran the shit out of the ball and did some weird things with Cam Newton. And I think the NFL wasn't ready to catch up with that. And then they finally did. And then it was over. And so he's the running joke has been Ron Rivera will lead your team to 8-8. Dan Quinn has had a really, really good team that was always in the playoffs, always competing, and it wasn't like some gimmicky shit. And then they had some roster problems that made them fall off, some big injuries, some people that you were paying a lot of money that were not playing in games because they were missing time. Like it was very much a house of cards with what Dan Quinn was working with. And Ron Rivera, I don't ever think really had a house of cards. It was very much just like, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get anywhere from like 6-10 to like, I don't know, 9-7 typically. And like, that's kind of what you could expect. And he had a year or two that was good, but Dan Quinn has had success every single place he's been to. And I don't really know the last time that Ron Rivera has had quote success in the NFL. It's very old school, very, I don't know. It's not a modern way to do it. And I think that Dan Quinn is very with it with how he connects to players. People want to play for him. People want to play hard for him. You've heard even Micah Parsons talk about like months ago, like maybe he'll end up where Dan Quinn goes. Like, players wouldn't say that, especially as franchise players, unless they truly meant it about the coach that they loved. And I mean, I'm sitting on this soapbox talking about Dan Quinn the same way. Like Dan Quinn was the reason why I got 3 years in Atlanta. And if he had stayed there, I would have had more. And he finds guys that he likes. He takes time to build them up. He teaches them. He supports them with the right staff around it. Like he gets a bunch of guys that love ball together that are cognizant. Like they understand what's going on. And I think that that is what you're going to see out of them. And there's going to be passion. There's going to be fire. I'm really excited to see how this goes because I think that, again, personality-wise and what he's going to bring to the table, I'm really excited to see the identity of this Commander football team and how it shifts and how they're going to be expressive and how they're going to talk their shit and how they're going to say, strap it up, like we're here. Where I don't think that was the identity of a Ron Rivera team. And I'm really excited to see that come to life. And again, like I'm looking up and down the roster, dude, like they got dudes that can play. And yeah, like, are they going to need to make some plays over the next few years to get some more guys? Yes. But I mean, I like what they're working with. I like their receiving room. I like that they added Austin Eckler, who's on the tail end of his career, but can come in immediately and be a really big help for a young quarterback, especially in the passing game. People don't understand that in college, running backs aren't used in the passing game in the same way they are in the NFL. A lot of times they're stuck in protection. And in the NFL, the passing game is built around having outlets and checkdowns that can just get the ball out of the quarterback's hands. And in college, it's not often the case, especially in air raid systems. And I'm excited to see what Austin Eckler can do in this system and with this team where like he doesn't have to be the workhorse. He's just going to be a piece to it. They still have Brian Robinson. Like Austin Eckler can just be what he's good at in this offense, and I think it's going to be more bang for his buck there.
Yeah, so for those of you keeping track at home, we are the preemptive Sam Darnold podcast, and I think we're now the preemptive Dan Quinn podcast as well. So we're staking our flag on two guys, which is great. Let's flip over to Jaden Daniels here. You talked a lot about him. You did some really good film breakdowns on Jaden through this draft process. Everybody kind of expected he was going to end up here at Washington at number two. What do you like so much about him? And maybe tie in the Cliff Kingsbury connection here, because he'll be working with Cliff as his OC. And the more we talk about this, the more I just see Houston Texans part two emanating from this team. You have a defensive head coach, you have a fun young offensive coordinator, and you have what could be a stud rookie QB for him to work with. So what do you like about Jaden Daniels in this system?
Yeah, man. I when I watched Jaden Daniels as a passer, if I took away his legs from the game, he plays so similar to CJ Stroud with how his like body mechanics work, how he throws. He's got a whip of an arm. He doesn't need to overstride. He doesn't need a lot of space around him to throw. Like, he has that ability. He's not as polished of a passer as CJ Stroud is, but he has the physical capability to get there. And then you look at him dynamically with his legs. Like, look at what some of these quarterbacks had last year. You had 820 yards from Lamar Jackson, 657 from Fields, 606 from Hurts. You had Josh Allen, 524. You had Dobbs, had 421 rushing yards. Taysom Hill, 400. Mahomes had 400. Russell Wilson, a couple. Like, these guys were able to move the chains with their feet. And that's, like, MO number one. So if you can move the chains on third down with your feet, that's a huge asset as a quarterback. If you can break off an 80-yard touchdown run on third down as a quarterback when you're getting heavy man, that is massive. And I'm really, really excited to see the translation of his running style to the NFL, because I think he's going to have more space. In college, like, what they started to do to him, they would three-man rush, leave linebackers back. And so they'd have one more linebacker in the box to kind of have an eye on him, spy on him, whatever. Like, you can't do that in the NFL. You cannot rush three linemen all day long and think that you're going to get pressure on an NFL offensive line. Like, some of the gimmicky things that people try to do in college because of scheme fits and stuff is not going to work in the NFL. And guys like this, in my opinion, can become even more dangerous in the critical situations as runners. He might not have as many yards, might not have as many flashy plays, but he will change games in critical situations with his feet on top of what he can do as a passer. And that's what I'm most excited for. I'm like, let's see him in the red zone. Let's see him on third downs. When you feel like the game, we got the perfect coverage, we got a good pass rush. Oh, wait, he finds a lane because we weren't disciplined in how we ran the edges with our DNs. Like, these are the details of the game that really, really matter and change everything. And when you look at Mahomes' play, Mahomes isn't like a dual threat quarterback. Like, he is, but he's not like a true runner. He is a creative, smart, like, very tactical runner down and distance wise and situationally. And I think that we're going to find that out of Jaden Daniels this year, that it's like, damn, we had him, but there's nothing we can do. Perfect play call, perfect whatever, but like, he just was better than we were. And that's what I'm excited to see. I don't care about the huge touchdown runs. Like, give me Jaden Daniels on third down and a four-man rush.
Yeah, I also think that makes his floor higher. I was thinking about, I have a confession to make. I did my first fantasy mock draft yesterday, and I got Jaden Daniels pretty late in this 10-team PPR league. And I was thinking about it. I feel like in terms of rookie quarterbacks, his floor is so much higher because that running ability seems to be a safety net for a lot of guys. Whereas if you have Drake May, like, sure, he can run a little bit, but like, if the protection falls apart around him, if he has nobody to throw it to, he's cooked.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's over
for Jaden Daniels. Like, he can create for himself. And I think there's a lot of good examples. Like, from a fantasy perspective, Justin Fields was always a viable fantasy quarterback. RG3 had a great rookie year with Washington. And a lot of that was due to the fact that they could run and create. And maybe the longevity of their career wasn't there. And I'm not even going that far to say that Jaden Daniels will or not be here in 10 years. But from a rookie year perspective, it seems like it'd be a good safety valve for him.
Yeah, if you're just talking fantasy football this year, Jaden Daniels has got to be one of the top guys. He's already a better passer than Justin Fields is. He's going to be catered to. Justin Fields was never set up for success in Chicago. It's really funny that they got rid of him, and now they have the most stacked team of all time that Caleb Williams is going to walk into. But we'll get to that on another episode. But you look at what Sam Howell did last year. Sam Howell was a viable fantasy football quarterback, and he got you the passing yards. He had some rushing yards and some rushing touchdowns. Like, if Sam Howell was able to do it, Jaden Daniels is going to do it. And look, quarterbacks get hurt, quarterbacks this and that. You need to have a couple quarterbacks on your roster. I'd be trying to find Jaden Daniels and a way to get him, and I'd even reach for him a little bit because he could have a Justin Fields type of effect. Like, Justin Fields didn't play for a handful of games last year, still had almost 700 yards rushing that in this past season. That's 70 fantasy points without touchdowns off of just rushing. And they add up quick. And if you're trying to win fantasy leagues, dude, you got to find the value wherever you can get it. And I think that's one of the guys.
I want you to talk a little bit about how Dan Quinn interacts with quarterbacks in the offense side of the ball. I always find this interesting. Yeah. I know I've made my point known that I don't think it's a good idea to hire defensive coaches as your head coach, because you're always going to lose that OC to another job. And so you're always going to be cycling through offensive coordinators. Whereas if you hire them, they're going to stick around longer. We talk at the same time, though, we talk about how much we love the Texans and how much we love what they did. So in your experience, like, how does Dan Quinn interact with quarterbacks? How do you think he's going to play a role in Jaden Daniels' development? Will that be more of a Cliff Kingsbury thing? Just talk about that for a bit.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be very heavy on Cliff. And I would say what Dan Quinn did when I was in Atlanta was he always brought his perspective, and he was not going to tell you right, wrong, or indifferent often. He cares a lot about protecting the football, so don't throw a lot of interceptions. It's okay. You're going to throw interceptions, but, like, don't be reckless was his MO. Take care of the football. Don't do stupid shit, but, like, go be a dog. That's his MO. And so from that, he's going to give his perspective on from a defensive side of, like, hey, a guy like you, this is how I would try to stop you. So expect this. You might be watching this on film from this team, and this is what they do week to week, but you're different than these other quarterbacks. So expect maybe this is the changeup. Expect this on third downs. Hey, critical situation, they're probably going to try to zero you. Look back at Lamar Jackson a few years ago when the Miami Dolphins zeroed him like 10 times in a row. They're going to be doing that. So, hey, early on, week one preseason, we need to have a zero package that you are so comfortable with inside and out. You know how to protect yourself. You know how to bring tight ends in. You know how to bring the running back in, make them cross protect so that the extra looper, the man guy, the green dogs add zone on the opposite side. Like, those are the details of the conversations that I think will go on, especially early in the year as it progresses. You never want to put too much on a young quarterback's plate, but hey, we're going to make sure you're protected and safe and you know where your outlets are. And this is what I would do to stop you. And I think those are what you're going to find the most. And again, we won't ever know, but I'd presumably think that that's the conversations that are going to be happening behind closed doors that will help Jaden Daniels' development, having a head coach that's a defensive guy.
Do you think Cliff is the right guy to help develop Jaden here?
I do. And after talking to other people too, the way that Cliff navigates things, I think he brings it down to a level that's really understandable. He has the roots from the Texas Tech air raid system, which it's creeping its way into college or into the NFL more and more. So, like, that stuff is becoming more relevant than it was a couple of years ago. Players are more keyed in with it, more RPOs. Like, RPOs weren't even a thing in like 2015, 16. They started coming around with Carson Wentz really in 17, 18. And I think just the base package of what the offense is going to be is going to be something that's really comfortable for Jaden to operate in.
A couple of key additions. You mentioned one of them, Austin Eckler, Jeremy Chin and Bobby Wagner. Is there a way that you think a team should be built around a young quarterback like this? I liked your point about this being a free agent destination. I also think for teams to have sustained success, you have to build primarily through the draft, and those free agent acquisitions are just what put you over the top. I think there's a lot of counterpoints to, like, the Rams selling out to win that one Super Bowl, and then you have a couple of years with no draft picks and you struggle in purgatory for a bit. But how would you build around a young guy like Jaden Daniels on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, so first off, I would try to keep as many draft picks as possible for the long haul. And if a guy becomes available at a bargain week 8, 9, when some team season is going down and they're trying to ditch him, get whatever they can for that year, and they're already in tank mode, that's when I would be eyeing up some of these trades. Like the Christian McCaffrey trade to the 49ers right before shit hit the fan in Carolina. Well, as shit was hitting the fan in Carolina, was such a great addition for the Niners at the value, what they gave up, all that stuff. Like, those are the types of things that you look for your young quarterback to get it done. Like, look at how patient they were for Stephon Diggs in that. They gave up basically nothing. And yeah, like, they got some contract stuff or whatever they got to deal with. But for me, you look for value adds and you don't reach in free agency, especially when, like, you don't know necessarily if, are you competing this year? Like, probably, but, like, maybe. Like, that's something that as the season goes on, you try to figure out. And then by year two, like, I would expect them to be really aggressive this next off season for the free agents, for trades, whatever. But this first year, I think it's set the foundation, get your core group of guys, see what you have and what you don't have from the previous regime. And then now you're really going to try to build for this 2-3-4 year stretch.
Is there a Dan Quinn type of player that he's looking for? I thought an interesting note that producer Roddy put in here that I appreciated was that he brought Bobby Wagner, who's 34 years old. Something that was surprising to all of us was that last year, Bobby had made the return to Seattle at 33, posted a career high and a league high in total tackles with 183 at 33 years old, which put him just one short of his career high in solo tackles from 2017, which was kind of this like prime Legion of Boom time, which obviously is Dan Quinn was the coach during that prime Seattle defense era. Is Bobby Wagner indicative of this type of player that he likes to have around in your experience?
I think early on, when you're trying to do a rebuild, you want a guy like Bobby Wagner because he is an extension of Dan Quinn on the field. When you're trying to communicate to the rest of the guys, like there's so many little tidbits from having a veteran player on the field that you just don't get unless you have a guy on the field leading the way. And again, how do you learn in the NFL? You go in meeting rooms, you watch film, you take it from the film room, to the practice field, and back and forth. And then you get into games. Then you realize in games, shit, this shit's different than it was in practice. It's different than it was written on my playbook. And it plays out a little differently than they can explain. And that's when you start building experience. And when you have a guy like Bobby Wagner that's able to share his experience and his perspective to the guy to the left of him, to the right of him, behind him, D-line, like those things can bring everybody else up on that defense up a level until they kind of have it all figured out on their own and are building their own version of that Dan Quinn defense in their own brains. And then those guys can then share it forward to the next class of draft guys or new free agents coming through. I think what you're looking for in a guy like Bobby Wagner is how quickly can he help expedite the rest of the defense to get on the same page so Dan Quinn can call the games how he wants to? Because again, there's nothing worse than a defensive coordinator who wants to do something but knows that he can't because his guys can't handle it mentally. You feel like your hands are tied and you're just like, all right, go play the cover three. Like, I mean, whatever, like can't really blitz because you're going to be out of position. You're going to give up a freebie on third down. And like, as soon as the defense ties all together, that's when things really, really work well. And I think Bobby Wagner helps them get to that. Everybody working at the same time on the same page and disguising things. I think it'll really help. And a great example of this, like when I was in Atlanta, we used to have like competitive periods in practice, just like anybody else. And there was a nickel defender that was just so bad at disguising. Like he just like was the one person out of whack all the time. Like you would kind of be looking at the shell of the defense, looking at the eyes of the linebackers, eyes of the corners. Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And then you'd look at that nickel and it's like, oh, he's blitzing. They're rolling a cover two. And it would be one guy that would give away the entire coverage when all 10 other people are disguising right. And so a guy like Bobby Wagner really helps get everyone on the same page so that you can disguise coverages across the board and everybody's working in tandem and rotating at the same times. And like, it really is an art form. It's not just line up X's and O's. You do this, you do this, you do this. It's definitely a mental game.
Do you think there's pressure on Jaden Daniels to come in and be a leader in the locker room right away?
I don't actually. I think, and I hope that he's not having the pressure to do that. Yeah, he needs to be a leader, but lead in your own way. The worst thing that he can do is have an expectation of what a leader looks like and try to be someone he's not. Come in and be yourself, whether you're a loud guy, whether you're a fiery guy, whether you're a calm guy, whatever you are, be the best you that you can be. Lead by example and your work will show and it will pull guys along. And so that's what I hope that he does for this team, because there's nothing worse than you see a guy and he's doing stuff that you know he's not comfortable doing and you're like, dude, you're just rah-rah for nothing. Like, that's not you. Like, just don't do that.
I've always been curious. It seems like Dan Quinn is going to hone on the defensive side of the ball, probably where he'll spend most of the time. Is there a lot of crossover in personalities and leadership in the locker room between offense and defense? Like the smooth brain analysis of this is Bobby Wagner comes in. He's going to be a great leader to help Jaden Daniels through this first year of his career. But in reality, I'm assuming Bobby Wagner and Jaden Daniels are not spending a ton of time together. So what is that crossover like? And what requires somebody on the offensive side of the ball to help pick up some of the leadership slack that Jaden Daniels might not be ready to do?
Yeah. I think a guy like Austin Ekeler helps that a lot. I think a guy like Terry McLaurin helps that a lot. Like those guys that have been there, done that, take some of the pressure off of Jaden to have to pretend to be the guy that has the experience when he doesn't. He does not have the experience. So to have older guys on the offensive side of the ball that can start bringing along some of these other guys, whether it's Austin Eckler talking to offensive linemen that are young, and like even the O-line, they got some old guys in the O-line. Like, it's definitely a group effort. And look, they are looking to Jaden Daniels to be their savior. It is what it is. So stay out of his way. Let him catch up as quickly as he can and go figure out how he's going to be the savior instead of have to bring everybody else along in this year one. Year two, three, four, he's going to have more conversations. He's going to have more nuances in the offense that are not just drawn to scale on the paper, that he'll be able to help morph this offense into what he wants it to be to the best of his ability. And look, year one, they're going to be trying to figure that out. And watch the jump that CJ Stroud makes with his receivers this next year versus this past year when everything's just on paper in a line. Like, you even saw the progression throughout the course of the year. Like, when he was hit that soundbite with him talking to Bobby Slowick about a pump that he wanted because he saw something on film and he trusted him enough, and Bobby said, cool, you feel comfortable with it? Let's do it. Wasn't in the game plan at all. And that was CJ Stroud seeing it. And it happened really fast for him. He went from week 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, figuring it out, to bam, week 8, 9, 10, playoffs. He was rolling and he was a different player. And I think that everybody's timetables are different. It's going to take Jaden a different amount of time than CJ Stroud. He's an anomaly, but got to give those guys time to figure it out. And once they do, you're going to have a guy that has the potential to be playing at a really high level for a really long time, assuming they don't mess up their roster and they keep feeding him with good talented guys, good people in the locker room. The coaching staff stays intact. There's just so many moving parts.
There are. I think, though, it seems like if the quarterback works, and this is true all the time, if the quarterback works, that smooths over every other gap in the roster or coaching mistake that will happen. How much of this first year, the success or the failure, do you tend to put on the rookie quarterback versus the situation around it? Like, if you could assign a percentage to, okay, if he succeeds, it's this percent his fault or this percent his responsibility versus the field, you know, the circumstances that he came into.
I'm going to give the quarterback so much grace in this, and I'm going to say that if it's super successful, it's probably 60 to 70% his fault. If it's not super successful, he probably couldn't contribute more than 30% anyways. Like, I'm gonna weigh both sides of that scale super heavy, because at the end of the day, to have a rookie quarterback that has success, he's got to show up ready. Doesn't matter what's around him. There's going to be influences from players, receivers, scheme, this and that. Like, same thing with CJ Stroud. Like, CJ Stroud, if he had went to New England last year, wouldn't be the player that he was this year. Just was a bad situation, but he probably would have elevated them a hell of a lot more than what we saw from the Patriots. And same here. Like, if Jaden went to New England, I would say the same thing. Like, Jaden, I would expect zero, and it's going to be fun to watch him run around and play, but like, I'm not expecting a whole lot. So if anything happens, I'm going to put a lot on him. So yeah, it's obviously a tough question, but I'm not going to be too hard on him if it goes bad, and I'm going to give him a lot of praise if it does go well.
I think that's probably the right way to look at it, especially coming from a quarterback. I'm not surprised by the answer.
Yeah.
I'd love to close these out to get your sense of, like, I don't need an exact record prediction, because I know a lot of it's matchup based, and I think record predictions are stupid anyway, because a team can look very different in week 17 than they can look right now. But maybe, given the divisional opponents, we gave a breakdown. Where do you think they'll fall in the NFC East? Will it be among the top teams? Will they remain at the bottom like they had the last couple of years? How do you see this season shaking out for the Commanders?
Man, I think they could be number one or number two in this division this year. And again, it comes down to which version of the defense shows up, because they were so bad. And how much can Dan Quinn get them right in 1 year without maybe some of the right guys, some of the right additions, whatever? I think that they're going to have a chance. They got Chan at safety. That'll help lock down the secondary. You can see their theme there. They try to get a staple guy in each level of the defense, all three levels. And they got Bobby Wagner at the second level, and the D-line hopefully can produce this year. They obviously got Fowler, who came over from the Cowboys, right? That was a nice get. And Fowler was also with Dan Quinn in Atlanta. And Fowler was a UF guy, and Dan Quinn was a UF guy. And Fowler, if you know him, is fiery, and he's a dog, and he'll punch you in the mouth, and he'll do it again and again. Like, those are the types of guys that he likes. Got Jonathan Allen, like I said. as long as they stay healthy, man, they could really run this. And it's going to be a dogfight with the Eagles for sure. I have this gut feeling that the Cowboys are going to really disappoint and it's all going to blow up this year. And I don't think it's going to be Dak's fault. I don't think it's going to be CD. Like, I don't think it's going to be their fault, but good luck replicating the defensive performance that you had last year. And also, I mean, they got the shit beat out of them by the Packers last year. Like, absolutely embarrassed at home, and they didn't get better in the offseason. So, I don't know, man. I'm holding a lot of weight to that playoff loss. That could be the pin in the balloon that is just going to slow leak this shit out the rest of the year. But yeah, Eagles, Commanders, Cowboys, Giants is the order that I have it. And I could see the Commanders really giving the Eagles a problem if their coordinator situations aren't better this year.
Sure.
The Eagles offense last year was so bad. Like, it was so, so bad to watch on film. And I mean, for their hope, I hope they have it figured out, because it was just a tough product to watch on offense.
I mean, that's another team that you could see potentially being blown up if it doesn't go right this year. It seems like every year we come in, Mike McCarthy's on the hot seat. Last year, Nick Sirianni, I think a lot of people are surprised that he kept his job. And so if things are not going well for those teams, and I would say those two teams have a much higher threshold, or rather a much lower threshold of what it takes to get a coach fired. Like, if you're 500 halfway through the season, Mike McCarthy, Nick Sirianni, you might be out of a job. In which case, that division breaks wide open.
Let's just talk about it, dude. Like, you look at the Giants too, and the Giants were bad. The Giants were so bad. But the Giants defense led the league in turnovers last year. The Giants defense is still going to be good. The Giants offense has no choice but to be better. Like, the Giants, as long as Daniel Jones plays better than he did last year, they'll be okay. Got a good receiver they drafted. Like, the Giants aren't going to be just a team that you walk all over. And they really weren't a team you walk all over anyways. They, division-wise, what? They were 4-4 at home. They're 2-7 away. I don't know what they went in their division last year, but the Giants are not an easy team to play against because of how they play football. The Commanders are going to be a tough team to play against. And the Eagles and the Cowboys, in my opinion, did not really get better. I think the Eagles had a good draft, but I don't know, man. If I was Mike McCarthy right now, I'd be like, you're not adding anybody to this team. Like, you know what I mean? Like, give me somebody.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. You could be looking at Dak Prescott in a different uniform next year. You could be looking at CeeDee Lamb in a different uniform in time to come. Like, who the hell knows? But this, I would be really skeptical about all things the star this year.
All right, Kurt, I want to close out every episode like this when we do these case studies for the remainder of the offseason. I want you to look into the camera, and I want you to sell your last bit of hope to Commanders fans. We've been generally very positive, but give them something that they can play on repeat for the rest of the summer until their team kicks off in September. Why should the Commander fans be excited for this season?
All right, here we go. Commanders fans, you've been through it. You've had one of the worst owners in NFL history. You've had one of the worst teams in NFL history in the past decade plus. You have not felt the glory days in a really long time. But do not worry, because glory is coming back in the form of Jaden Daniels, Dan Quinn, Adam Peters, and all the good things that you have not had in a really long time. And your division, you got the big bad Eagles, you got the Cowboys, these two top dogs, I'm not feeling like they're going to be on top much longer, especially the guys down in the star. Feels a little shaky. Jerry Jones is doing his best to not add anybody and think we're good how we are. Well, the world around him is evolving. The Commanders are getting younger. They're getting more talented, and they have a fresh breath of life in them. And you guys have a lot to be excited for this year. It does not get any worse than what you guys put out on defense last year. 518 points given up. You were terrible. But now you have Dan Quinn, the savior, who only lit up 315 points last year as the Cowboys defensive coordinator with a bunch of injuries, I will add for you. He did it with less than he was given to start the year, and he's going to do it with less with the Commanders. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with, and it might be this year, it might be next, but you guys are going to be the new Houston Texans, young rising star team led by greatness.
Fantastic. If I'm a Commanders fan, that's my ringtone. That's my alarm when I wake up in the morning. I mean, this is the best time of year anyway. You have so much to look forward to. And especially when you have a young quarterback, like, I remember this with Jordan Love. Like, you're looking for any camp tape. You're all the beat reporters. Yeah. You have tweet notifications on. Like, you only want good news. And I'm glad we could deliver some good news today.
Dude, Commanders fans must be feeling like so high every day they wake up.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
There's nothing to ruin the parade right now. There's no games. It's just all pure happiness. And I don't know. I'm like vicariously living through this experience for them, because it's been like, sometimes you deal with bad coaches. Sometimes you deal with bad players. Like, to deal with all of it and bad owner, like, you've been through it and you've gotten your name changed on you two times in 4 years. Like, you have so many different jerseys. Like, and now they want you to go back to the Redskins. It's just like, you guys don't even, you don't even know what you have, but you know you're going to have a number five in Jaden Daniels in whatever jersey they put out this year. And he's going to be ready to go. I'm excited for them.
I'm excited too.
Yeah.
I'm excited too.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful for them. And I hope that this makes its rounds on Reddit and that people just buy into the copium and hopium.
I love it. Well, for the rest of the summer, we're going to be doing these case studies on every team we can get to before the season starts. So make sure to comment which team you think we should do next. We're happy. We're going to dive into them, and we're going to sell you a little bit of hope on whatever team you have, regardless of if they're the Commanders or the Chiefs. I think we have a little something for everybody.
We have something for everybody. And if your team sucks this year by the end of it, don't come back to this video. See you guys next time.